Hey guys, welcome back to the plant-based podcast, formerly the Vegan Coach podcast, but now I have rebranded and can be found at the underscore plant-based underscore coach on Instagram. So this is the place if you want to have some clarity, some education, and some confidence around planning a plant-based diet. Each week I will have new episodes with guests, ranging from friends, personal trainers, nutritionists, doctors, past clients, and with the goal of just helping you be a little bit healthier on your plant-based diet, answering the questions that you're probably thinking about, and giving you hopefully some entertainment and education along the way. If you enjoyed this episode or any others, please make sure that you listen to others and share them through social media, so more people can be helped by this. Have a great listen, and I will see you on the other side.
Lance, I'm a, I don't know if you know this, I'm a PhD student,
yeah.
Third year, just doing research. Yeah, very close. I'm a rock climber. I'm very close to the outdoors here in Chattanooga, Tennessee, and Kentucky, which has some world famous rock climbing. Yeah. So yeah, life is good here.
Hence the name, the plant-based climber, right?
Right.
Have you done a podcast before with anyone?
No, I haven't.
Okay. Well, basically, it's just like having a phone conversation. And I just ask you questions and you answer them. It's pretty easy.
Sure. Yeah. Where are you based?
So I live in London at the moment. I'm from New Zealand originally, but I've been in London for the last 3.5 years. And you know, the reason I saw or wanted to have a chat to you was obviously Dr. Gareth Davis shared your kind of your paper that showed plant-based diets were superior for weight loss, which was actually quite obviously quite positive if you're plant-based, but also you know, it goes that one step further of just thinking, go in a calorie deficit. It's like, well, which is the best way to achieve that calorie deficit without, you know, being too obsessive about it? And you obviously broke it down into those, I think it was like those five different kind of elements, wasn't it?
Right. Yeah, six components, but essentially it boils down to our calories. It is still calories, but it's more that you consume, it boils down to that you consume less calories due to improved satiety, and also energy expenditures increase, so you burn more calories.
Yeah, it's just like a healthier, more efficient, and smarter way to go about it.
Right, right. So yeah, there's no need for portion control as long as the right foods are consumed, because you'll inherently be at an appropriate weight for your body, just based on fullness anxiety.
Yeah, cool. Were those other topics I sent through, were they pretty decent? You know enough about that to kind of cover, based on your research and studies. Yeah. Well, should we get into it then?
Yeah, let's do it.
I mean, I've already pressed record, so everyone's been listening.
Okay.
I already cut things out if I need to, but I think it's important that it's a free flowing conversation anyway. Before we go back into that paper that you just talked about, do you want to just maybe introduce yourself a little bit more? Like, why did you decide to do what you do? Maybe your background into why you're plant-based and that kind of thing.
Sure. So I've been consuming a plant-based diet for about 9 years now. And I initially got into it actually I was inspired by ethical reasons, you could say. I read the book Eating Animals, which is about factory farming. And that whole thing just turned me off to eating animal-based foods. And I noticed I started to feel better. And that's when I started to investigate the health side of things. So I would say my main foundation for consuming such a diet is a health-based approach, but I understand and sympathize with ethical argument and environmental argument as well. But yeah, my passion is nutrition research. So I didn't want to be a dietitian who just works in a hospital counseling patients. I feel like you can have a much bigger impact in the medical industry and society as a whole by publishing research.
Yeah.
So that's what I did. So I have my master's in science, which I got in Texas, and I did mostly clinical research with humans. And now at Georgia State University, getting my PhD, it's a chemistry with a concentration in nutrition. So it is mostly totally on the other end of the spectrum, mostly biochemical mechanistic base. So doing a lot of cell studies. Now we do animal studies, which I know you know, a lot of vegans are ethically against. But it's just the nature of this type of research. But anyway, yeah, we look at gene expression, protein, enzymatic expression at the cellular level of inflammation, oxidative stress. So we really have a very deep understanding of these types of disease conditions. So I come from a unique background where I have both the clinical side of things and also the mechanistic sides of things. And I hope to combine both aspects in the future, doing human studies, hopefully without animals, analyzing tissue, looking at protein and gene expression, and having that correspond with physiological outcomes.
Yeah.
Partially related to heart disease. That's my that's my primary interest.
For heart disease, was it?
Yeah, cardiovascular disease. Yeah, heart failure and the like, atherosclerosis.
Okay. How old were you when you read that book and turned plant-based?
19. I was 19. So I'm 28 right now.
Okay. Cool.
Yeah.
So that's like double the length of time that you've been compared to me. I've only been plant-based for like 4 years. So,
okay.
You know, I underwent that same kind of, I feel just as good eating plants. Why would I contribute to those other things if I can feel pretty awesome just eating plants? And then you kind of obviously research it and find out that you can thrive on a plant-based diet as long as you do it right. And I guess that is probably the attraction of getting you on here, is making sure that whoever's listening is actually getting what they need from a plant-based diet. Because of course we always hear of how vegan diets can be deficient in so many things, but also so beneficial. So I guess to go into my next question, what would be maybe the key things that people need to get right to thrive on a plant-based diet? Maybe apart from, you know, the things that they probably already know from, like, you're supplementing with B12, vitamin D in the winter, and that kind of thing.
Well, firstly, I would say that in the U.S., the leading nutrition body is the Academy of Nutrition and Dietetics, and they are the ones who license all registered dietitians and such. And they have a position statement, 2016 position statement on plant-based diets, both vegan and vegetarian. And they claim outright at the very beginning is that vegetarian and vegan diets are appropriate for all life stages, infancy, pregnancy, lactation, athletes, older adults, children. They're appropriate for all stages of life, and all nutrient needs can be met on a plant-based diet. So even the leading body in nutrition in the U.S. has this claim. So people who claim otherwise are not necessarily are just more fear-mongering than actually bringing up any true arguments. And I would say, as long as and there are studies, for example, look at unhealthy versus healthy plant-based diet, whereas healthy is classified as whole grains, right, versus white flour, white rice, brown rice, whole wheat, beans, fruits, veggies, all these unprocessed, intact whole plant foods are going to be superior to the more refined plant-based foods. And I really like, I think a good starting point is Dr. Greger's Daily Dozen. I don't know if you're familiar with that app.
Yeah, How Not to Die is in this book, wasn't it?
Yeah. So that is a good way to ensure you're getting the proper variety of nutrients. And it becomes second nature, and you just begin to eat that way.
Absolutely. And I found, you know, I've had gut doctors on, you know, on this podcast. They've always said the number one thing that kind of is associated with good health and good gut health is variety of plant foods. So the more variety you can get, the better it's going to be, as long as it's obviously the whole natural form. Because then obviously microbiome is going to thrive, and then that's going to obviously benefit your health overall.
Right. Yeah, the microbiome definitely has a huge play. I discussed some of that with in my review article regarding weight loss. It has a huge role in that regard.
Should we go into that now? Why not? How does the gut microbiome affect weight loss?
Sure. So you can actually, people who eat just an omnivorous diet, for example, 2,000 calorie diet, for example, there's a study that looked at that, and they found that when you feed these lean people a high calorie diet, for example, 3,400 calories per day, the gut bacteria population changes, shifts over to the unhealthy type, and the bacteria actually begin to break down the food more efficiently to where you're absorbing more calories. So it becomes harder to lose weight just from overeating on calories alone.
Okay.
just on that level. And then if we look at when we consume plant-based diets, we shift the bacterial population more to Bacteroides, which is a taxa. And essentially, we produce more short-chain fatty acids, which are from fiber fermentation, and this promotes satiety. So you get full faster and you stay full longer. For example, if you eat beans the night before in the morning, you're going to be more full just from that evening meal, just from the short-chain fatty acids. And I don't know if you're familiar with TMAO. That's it's a big thing these days. Yeah, that's from choline and carnitine fermentation in the gut, but it only happens in those consuming omnivorous diets.
Yeah, and how is that linked back to weight loss or weight gain? Right. I've obviously heard about it with cancer risk.
Right.
How does it kind of relate back?
Yeah, it's extremely tightly related to heart disease, kidney disease, and cancer to a degree as well. But with weight loss, it turns out the TMAO, so you have different types of adipose tissue, fat tissue. So there's white and beige. Beige is more metabolically active. It's more for heat generation. Mm-hmm. So TMAO actually prevents white adipose tissue from being the more metabolically active beige adipose tissue.
Okay.
There's the evidence for that is still in the early stages, but we have lots of cell culture and animal models suggesting that TMAO may actually have this negative effect on the beiging of adipose tissue.
Yeah, and because you obviously want that to be more metabolically active because then you burn more energy.
Right, exactly. And there are some epidemiological studies showing that higher TMO is associated with higher obesity levels, but there needs to be more clinical trials looking into this. This is a very new area of research right now in regards to weight loss with TMAO.
Yeah. So going back to what you said, is like that group that had the 3,400 calorie diet,
right,
just by overeating, it changed the...
Exactly. Just by overeating alone.
Yeah. So it didn't matter what they were eating. It was just, you know, you eat too many calories.
Exactly. It was the same food groups that they're eating the same foods, but just lower calorie at normal, you know, 2,000 versus 3,400. They already shifted their gut population just from doing that alone.
So do you think it's going to have like a negative effect on, you know, the bodybuilder population that, you know, obviously eat a huge amount of food because they want to put on weight? Their gut microbiome is going to probably be less healthy.
Certainly that would have an effect. Now it could be that those eating plant-based would not have the same effects. Hasn't been studied really. I can't speak to it. But I would assume so, just based on the type of gut populations that thrive in those eating plant-based diets. It's just very, very different from those consuming omnivorous diets.
Yeah, well, I guess you could look at it as a spectrum. Bodybuilders or people that are overeating meat-based diets are probably going to be worse off. And then people that are eating the same amount of calories but plant-based might be better off than them. But eating a moderate amount of calories on a plant-based diet is probably going to be the better population.
Right. Okay. And just really eating for satiety, I would think, because everyone's body, you know, is different. These people were overeating. They were eating 3,400 calories. They didn't need those 3,400 calories.
Mm, absolutely. And obviously a lot of gut doctors as well, they love those, I guess they're postbiotics, aren't they? The medium-chain fatty acids. You've got the fiber that obviously feeds the gut bugs. The gut bugs then turn the fiber, essentially, depending on what it is, into those postbiotics.
The short-chain fatty acids. Yeah.
Short-chain fatty acids, not medium-chain fatty acids. Yeah. So obviously in that paper, that review article, is that what we're calling it?
Yeah, review article. Mm-hmm.
There was also five other elements because I think general weight loss, people are pretty clued up on, okay, I need to achieve a calorie deficit. And like we said at the beginning, it's easier and healthier to do that on a plant-based diet based on this review that you looked at. And you obviously compared this to probably other popular diets, correct? So like keto, paleo.
Right, we looked at keto and Atkins. Yeah, just to briefly speak about calorie deficit. So plant-based diets, for example, fruits, veggies, whole grains, beans, these are inherently low in calorie density. So foods that have higher water content, higher fiber, because fiber, when you look at the nutrition label, fiber is counted as, so a carbohydrate, a gram of carbohydrate is 4 calories. on the nutrition label, fiber is also counted as 4 calories, but really it's around 2. You don't absorb all those calories because if you don't have the gut bacteria, it essentially passes through you undigested, but the gut bacteria break down those fiber into short-chain fatty acids, and you get around 2 calories per gram of fiber. But anyway, all that's to say that if you eat a high calorie dilute plant-based diet, so rich in these fruits and veggies, whole grains and beans, these are inherently lower in calorie density. So you get full, but you're not eating that much calories. So you can think about this in a way, if you were to eat dry oats versus cooked oats fill up, take a lot of space. So you get full faster off cooked oats versus dry oats. So you know, 500 calories of cooked oats might get you really full, whereas it may take 1500 calories of dry oats to get you really full just because there's not much volume to them.
Yeah, and I kind of compare 100 calories of, for my clients, 100 calories of like peanut butter versus 100 calories of broccoli. Like, which one's going to take more room in your stomach?
Yeah, it's that basic principle of calorie density. That's one big factor in how plant-based diets can reduce body weight.
And I think on that note, obviously, is making sure that you're not having like the processed oils, which are obviously very calorific and less dense, very high
so
calories.
Fruits around 200 to 300 calories per pound, oils around 4,000 calories per pound. So it's literally the most calorie-dense food on the planet. Right under that are nuts, actually, which nuts don't actually elicit the weight gain expected based on calories. There's a lot of metabolic effects that occur. And I discussed some of that in my review article as well. For example, unsaturated fatty acids, which are found mostly in nuts, it improves insulin sensitivity, and improves beta oxidation, so breakdown of fats. Now, improved insulin sensitivity is important because if you're insulin resistant, for example, those are diabetic, they have a hard time losing weight because energy expenditure, a big part of that is carbohydrate metabolism. So making glycogen, breaking down carbohydrates, all that uses energy. So if you are not able to do that very efficiently, you are not able to burn as much calories. So increased insulin sensitivity inherently will increase energy expenditure. So unsaturated fatty acids from nuts will do this, and they'll also increase beta oxidation, so fat breakdown. Whereas if you eat a high saturated fat rich diet, now this comes primarily from animal based foods, but coconuts and palm oil do have a lot of saturated fat. Beta oxidation is down regulated. You not get this upregulation of beta oxidation or breakdown of fat, and you increase insulin resistance.
Yeah, which I think, well, hopefully the rest of the world is waking up to, because you know, we used to think high sugar causes diabetes, but in fact there's a lot of saturated fat interference or, you know, inference in that kind of situation. So just to rewind a little bit, when you said, you know, when we take the metabolism of carbohydrates, you're basically talking about the thermo effect of food, you know, when you
exactly
eat a meal, you obviously still have to break it down, and that is greater when you're having a plant-based, you know, high fiber whole food meal.
Right. And there's lots of different phytonutrients in plants. For example, the polyphenol, the class of nutrients called polyphenols, which are found in whole grains, berries, onions, essentially all littered throughout the plant kingdom and almost all plant foods. They can upregulate your adipose tissue they're called uncoupling proteins. So basically the shiver effect, when you try to generate heat from shivering, those are uncoupling proteins. And there's a class of uncoupling proteins that can be upregulated just from these polyphenols. So you end up burning more energy just from upregulating these uncoupling proteins from eating plants. So all these factors combined reduce calorie density, gut microbiota symbiosis, these metabolic effects of insulin sensitivity, increase uncoupling proteins in your mitochondria to increase the thermic effect in your brown adipose tissue. Essentially, all that can lead to weight loss on a plant-based diet.
You know, it definitely is a very big benefit, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, we can get into this if you want, but the ketogenic crowd really has it quite wrong. And there's an abundance of evidence that shows that it's not in their favor. For example, when you restrict fats versus restricting carbs, those who restrict carbs lose more weight initially, but this weight is not fat mass, it's lean mass. So it could be water from glycogen depletion and also lean muscle mass that you'll find increased urinary nitrogen, which means they're breaking down muscle tissue. Because you have to have a steady supply of blood sugars in your bloodstream to sustain your red blood cells. Your red blood cells cannot metabolize fat. There's no mitochondria. So the only thing they can do is glycolysis, which is purely carbohydrate metabolism. So you have to have this steady supply of blood sugars in your bloodstream. And if you're not eating it, your body's going to get it from somewhere else, and it's going to get it from protein.
Which is breaking down the muscle.
Right.
Yeah, so what other things did you kind of find when you compared it against or looked at other studies that had compared a keto diet with, you know, a higher carb diet?
Sorry, repeat that.
What other kind of conclusions did you come to when you did look at the studies or the research comparing a keto diet or a low carb diet versus a high carb diet?
Right. So first off, that one reference I mentioned regarding reducing fat, reducing carbs, there's a meta-analysis looking at this, and essentially a meta-analysis of metabolic ward trials, which are very carefully designed studies where people are in metabolic chambers. So you're really carefully measuring energy expenditure. And the conclusion is that you burn more fat from restricting fats than restricting carbs. So that's very set in stone, very strong scientific finding. Now, when I hear restricting carbs, essentially the only thing that has carbs are plants. So if you're restricting carbs, you're inherently restricting plants to a significant degree. And we look at these ketogenic studies, for example. There's a four-week one that was published just this year in 2019. It found that when you fed people a ketogenic diet for 4 weeks, they were more insulin resistant after the glucose tolerance challenge. They had higher levels of inflammation, CRP. They had higher levels of cholesterol. So they became insulin resistant. You're driving heart disease forward. This type of diet is essentially the exact opposite of what we should be doing based on the evidence.
Mm. Why do you think there is such a big keto crowd? Do you think it is purely because they are seeing faster initial weight loss, and that is most people, that is why they do these diets in the first place, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, weight loss is one big factor. You see that initial weight loss. Again, it's not necessarily fat mass loss. It's going to be water weight loss. And people do it for diabetes because of a misunderstanding of the disease, thinking, oh, if my blood sugars are down, therefore my diabetes is getting reversed. When really you're still insulin resistant, but you're just not eating any carbohydrates.
Avoiding the pathway.
Right. So if you're not eating carb-containing foods, then yeah, obviously your blood sugars are going to decrease, but give them a glucose tolerance challenge, they're still going to be quite insulin resistant. So they really haven't cured diabetes. They just mask the symptoms. And then people will, you know, extrapolate a lot of, they'll misconstrue studies to put it in their favor. They'll ignore epidemiological evidence. You know, there's a lot of that in the low carb community.
100%.
Saturated fat is not linked to heart disease, when that's the same level of evidence we have to show that smoking is linked to lung cancer. So it's just a misunderstanding of science and how to interpret research, and definitely ignoring what research is out there to support the conclusion of eating a ketogenic diet.
Yeah, so to recap, if you go a keto diet to lose weight, you're going to lose muscle.
More so than you would lose some fat, but not as it would be mostly lean mass loss than fat loss.
Yeah, and I think that most people that go on these diets do actually want to lose fat, and that the research shows you lose more fat when you do it on a plant-based high carb.
And there's very strong metabolic ward studies that show this. So that's like the highest level of clinical evidence research.
Why do you think, actually, before we go into this question, because this is going to open up a whole other bag of worms, is there any other important conclusions that you kind of surprised yourself with or think that the audience should know when you did look at that review of like just the weight loss aspect of a plant-based diet?
Yeah, it's just very fascinating how synergistic everything is, because when you increase insulin sensitivity, for example, you'll get this increased thermogenesis, and it affects all your tissue essentially. So adipose tissue are influenced. You'll have more fat burning. Your muscle tissues will burn more fat. It's just pretty fascinating how just eating a plant-based diet, all this web of interconnected factors can influence weight reduction. So it is calories in, calories out, but it's not purely, the math doesn't work out just because the metabolic effects are changing.
Yeah. There's other conditions that need to be added in.
Sorry?
There's other conditions that kind of
right.
affect that. And I think right. we haven't even really talked about it, but like we're just saying, oh, a plant-based diet is better for weight loss, but it's also way better for your health, like long-term health. And that should always be a consideration if you're trying to lose weight. Like, yes,
definitely.
For most people, definitely. Most people losing weight is probably the healthiest thing that they can do. And if
right.
you can do it on a plant-based diet, you're also looking at your longevity of living for as long as possible. So
yeah.
Why would you not want to do it that way?
Right, exactly. Yeah, are you by chance familiar with Dr. Baxter Montgomery? He's based in Houston, Texas.
I'm not, but maybe if you tell me about his stuff that he does, then maybe I would have heard of it.
Sure, he runs a cardiovascular clinic in Houston, and he uses plant-based nutrition as a first-line treatment for his patients. And he's seen thousands of patients and used this on them. When I was based in Houston, I actually worked with him and we conducted some clinical studies and we demonstrated that plant-based diet could reduce this type of cholesterol called lipoprotein A, which mm-hmm. has never been demonstrated to be reduced by diets. You can give people lots of eggs and saturated fat. It won't increase it. You can have people lose weight. It won't decrease it. You can give them more plants. It won't decrease it. But we found that a strict plant-based diet was able to reduce this type of cholesterol, which is very tightly linked with heart disease risk. And this is the first study to ever show that a plant-based diet could reduce that.
It's pretty amazing.
So a plant-based diet has very profound effects for sure in terms of overall health.
Mm. When you were looking at all of these research articles and obviously when you're in the lab and you're looking at a lot closer, you know, at the mechanisms that this is happening, do you ever find anything that is negative about a plant-based diet?
Let's see, negative. I have not come across anything negative really. I mean, other than consuming processed plant foods, there's not really any negative attributes that exist that I know of that I've come across or anything like that. There's really only positive benefits to consuming a plant-based diet.
I think it only comes in the maybe adherence to a plant-based diet because we're living in a world, obviously, where it's not exactly plant-friendly. We're still being told that we should eat meat and animal products, and all of our easy to grab food usually contains animal products. So it's probably more about the actually sticking to it and getting your body used to it. If you're new to it, you know, obviously if you add legumes in and you haven't had them before, you might get a tummy ache because your body's like, what the heck is this new food you're just eating?
Right.
So it's probably more of the sticking to it rather than the actual benefits in the lab kind of thing. Right.
Right. Sticking to it and eating the right types, as we discussed earlier. Staying away from like the fake meats and all those processed plant-based foods.
Yeah, absolutely. So obviously, you know, there are people that disagree with the plant-based diet and they have scientific evidence to back up their disagreements sometimes. Why do you think that the science kind of exists and, you know, how can we be better? Like you said before, they kind of completely either don't know how to interpret it or maybe they're just ignoring like maybe the blue zone groups or the Seventh Day Adventists, which obviously, you know, the healthiest of the Seventh Day are the ones that don't eat meat. Like, why have they got a point?
Yeah, so I think a lot of that evidence is actually misconstrued. So when people will point to studies saying, look, this shows that a plant-based diet is not healthy, usually those studies don't necessarily point to those conclusions or they're misinterpreting that research. For example, there was a recent one that showed that you had an increased risk of strokes in vegetarians versus omnivores. I don't know if you recall that. It was in the news.
Yeah, yeah. the Epic Oxford study was.
So if you look at that research, the people on the vegetarian diet were having hardly any fiber, less than the recommended intakes. They had low levels of omega-3. They were mostly deficient on B12. So this is not a healthy cohort to compare it to. It's not a healthy plant-based diet. Even so, it is interesting that you had this effect, but it turns out that, because omnivores are essentially, when you look at their macronutrients and micronutrients, were very, very similar. But if you look at the fact that they were low in B12, low omega-3, this can increase the risk of strokes. So that's the factor there. But even so, besides that, they weren't eating a healthy plant-based diet. So you can't conclude that plant-based diets will increase stroke risk based on this evidence.
Yeah, I actually was at an event on the weekend and they had a doctor's panel there, and that study came up. And the guy was basically like, the people in that study that were vegetarian are the unhealthiest vegetarians on the planet, British vegetarians, because they just replace what they would be eating with meat. They replace it with cheese and eggs. Right. And the saturated fat is almost at the same level as the omnivores in the study. The fiber is at the same level as the omnivores in the study. And we know that those two things are obviously very important to be, you know, fiber high, saturated fat low, to make sure that we have good indicators of health. So it's no surprise that there wasn't, you know, a healthy outcome for the vegetarians in that study.
Yeah, it's certainly. So there's a lot of evidence like that that is used against plant-based diets, where they're simply not good representations of plant-based diets. There was one recently that was a review looking at how red meat is not linked to ill health. I'm sure you're familiar with that one as well. Mm-hmm. And that the way they classified those studies, when you actually look at the studies themselves, they all had the opposite conclusions as the review article, but they used essentially a classification system as rigorous as drug trials. So you couldn't even prove that smoking is linked to lung cancer based on that type of standard.
Mm.
It's not an appropriate measure for nutrition research.
Yeah, if you're smart enough, you can kind of design a study to, or a review to come out with what you wanted to, right?
Right. So, for example, there's a lot of studies showing that they're mixed with eggs, showing, oh, eggs don't increase cholesterol or don't increase TMAO or et cetera. And these studies are designed in such a way to show that. They'll measure fasting levels, so they'll eat an egg the night before and then measure it in the morning. And really, it's mostly about the postprandial phase. So right after you consume a meal, that's when all the negative effects of diet occur. That's when you'll have the oxidative stress and inflammation and the dysfunction of the arteries in which heart disease progresses. But in the fasting state, you're not going to see those conditions.
Yeah, of course. And I think it's also important, this is what I remind people, is what are those studies comparing the keto diet to? Are they comparing it to a standard American diet? And if so, then you might see benefits, because if someone's not exercising and then now they start exercising because they're on a keto diet, if somebody loses weight on a keto diet, their marker's going to be better. But at the end of the day, that's still compared to a standard American diet, which is a really crappy starting point. Whereas if you compare it to a plant predominant diet, then what results would you get? And obviously those results.
Right. An argument could be made that that's similar in plant-based studies, but you do have a lot of plant-based research that compare plant-based diet to the American Heart Association diet or American Diabetes Association diet. So these are considered more healthier omnivorous diets versus a totally processed standard American diet. But also it's about the long-term health effects, not just the short-term effects. You know, weight loss does not mean that you're healthy. You can still get heart disease at being very thin.
Yeah, absolutely.
There was that recent Lancet review published 2019 showing that those in the lowest carbohydrate intakes have the highest mortality rates compared to the higher carbohydrate intakes, if those carbs were derived primarily from plant-based foods, then risk was decreased.
Yeah, I think that was it was like 4 years difference, right? Between the low and the high. And then I think I put that on Instagram actually.
It was that Lancet review.
Yeah, so obviously whenever we talk about these kind of research articles, and if you're not pro plant-based, you know, you'll say, oh, those studies are just population studies, they're only observational studies, that doesn't prove anything. And of course it does mean that we need to look closer at the science. To my understanding, when we see a population that is living the healthiest, we as you know, for yourself as a researcher, you're probably thinking, why are they living the longest? And then that's when you take those studies into the lab, you do random controlled trials, and then you try and find out the mechanisms of why those populations might live longer. So right. Am I correct in saying that, would you say?
Yeah, you have these population observations, and honestly, it's pretty common that these population observations are accurate when you do clinical trials and these types of mechanistic studies. It's rare that you find a population with some health aspects, for example, low intake of some nutrient, and there's not some sort of effect clinically. We can't just ignore epidemiological evidence. The only evidence we have that smoking, or like the strongest evidence we have that smoking is linked to lung cancer, as I said, is that it's is epidemiological evidence.
Absolutely. How are you going to, like, as a researcher, as an ethical researcher, how would you create a long-term human study to prove that, you know, smoking gave you lung cancer? Are you going to tell your participants, hey, we're going to try and give you lung cancer and see who dies first?
Right. It's not ethical. Same thing with heart disease. You can't follow, you can't have people do something for 20 years or 30 years, you know, to see if they get heart disease. But I mean, a plant-based diet is essentially the only diet ever shown to reverse heart disease. Whereas you put people in an Atkins-style diet, you can actually increase atherosclerotic plaque in their arteries, which has been demonstrated.
Mm. Okay. So I guess this kind of goes on to, and all I've been thinking about this whole time is the movie or the documentary Game Changers. and there is a big thing in there about protein. And obviously we do live in a world obsessed with protein. Do you think that our protein obsession, even from a plant-based perspective, is kind of hindering our overall health outcomes?
There is definitely, I mean, protein is marketed in the popular media and is considered the most paramount nutrient to consume. But there's no one in the United States that is protein deficient. Less than 3% of the population is protein deficient. That's the lowest value that could be assigned. And those are people that are essentially in calorie deficit. So if you're just eating not enough food, you will be protein deficient inherently, because protein is tightly linked to calorie intake.
Absolutely.
So it's almost impossible to design a diet that's calorie deficient or that's protein deficient, unless it's calorie deficient. Exceptions would be like a strict fruitarian diet, which is very difficult to meet protein needs. You'd have to eat 3,000 to 4,000 calories a day. To meet protein needs on a fruitarian diet alone. But when you look at, for example, normal population is 0.8 grams per kilogram of protein that's needed. So, you know, if we do that math, someone who is, I mean, you know this, of course, yourself. For example, I'm 150 pounds, so what is that, like 68 kilograms, I believe, something like that. So I need around 50-something grams of protein per day. If I was not an athlete, and if you're an athlete, 1 to 1.2 is 68 to 81 grams of protein, which I exceed inherently just from eating plant foods without even trying, not even seeking protein-rich foods. You just inherently end up exceeding those requirements.
Yeah, and I think if people go on the hunt for protein, like on a plant-based diet, they're probably going to have more protein powders and fake meats because they want more protein.
Right.
And they then are obviously missing out on other foods that still contain protein but also contain other healthier nutrients and minerals, which protein powders that you get in a tub aren't going to be containing. So you're kind of hindering your long-term health in a way as well.
It's very hard to get out of that mindset, especially for those who are athletic, because it's an obsession
since I get the macro split question so often, how much protein do you have so often, and the whole I'm trying to lose weight, so I need to lower my carbohydrates and up my protein, and I find it so hard to do on a plant-based diet. And I'm like, just need to – it's very hard. Yeah, it's super hard to get people out of their mindset, especially you know, when they're new to the whole plant-based thing.
Like, yeah, it's the wrong direction.
You need to change the way that it's so hard to, like, you have to say sorry, but you need to change the way that you're thinking. It's like everything you've known about protein, you need to change it and think. Yes, protein is important, but so are carbohydrates. And, you know, the longest living populations, the highest performing athletes, their diet is predominantly carbohydrates. So if you want to live long and perform well, have more carbohydrates and just make sure it's, you know, within the allowance of energy that you need to have.
Right.
Go ahead.
I was going to say there was that 2017 study looking at elites long distance. They were elite walkers, I believe. Maybe you're familiar with this one, where they had them going on a keto diet versus just their regular carbohydrate-based diet. It wasn't a plant-based diet, but it was just normal carbohydrate intake in the population. And those on the keto diet had reduced exercise economy, meaning it took more energy, more oxygen to get the same amount of ATP. So it was essentially a much more inefficient way to consume food, and they ended up having worse race times and were just performing much more poorly.
Yeah, which isn't good, is it?
No, exactly, in terms of performance.
What did you think of the Game Changers documentary?
So, to be honest, I haven't watched it. I've just heard a lot about it.
Have you read any of the debunking articles?
I have not. I've just heard that it's cherry-picked, which I don't quite understand, because we already know that an omnivorous diet, people can be strong eating meats. The whole point is to show that you can be strong eating plants too.
Yeah.
So I don't understand how the cherry-picked argument makes sense, because this is something that people are not aware of, that, oh, you can eat plant-based and be a elite-level athlete. That's, I don't quite understand the cherry-picked argument. And I think that in terms of the research they cited, just because you're not aware of the research doesn't mean it's cherry-picked.
Yeah, exactly. And I think there's even research they didn't put in there which would have made even a stronger argument, like some of the stuff that you just spoken about now.
And, you know, most documentaries are intended to appeal to the emotional side. It's not intended to be, you know, there's science-based aspects to it, but I don't think that's the intention of most documentaries.
Sure. And one thing that it does pop up in the debunking articles, you know, people saying that, you know, you're not getting a complete protein if you're having plant-based, and, you know, most plants are incomplete proteins. Do you want to maybe talk about that?
Sure. So let's say you're an athlete, you eat 2,500 calories per day or so. If you were to do a mono food, for example, if you ate 2,500 calories of carrots, all the amino acids are present in sufficient quantities. There's nothing missing. There's nothing that's too low. All of them are there in excess of what you need. You do the same thing with corn, beans, almost all these foods, except fruits. Fruits is an exception. You're going to be exceeding your amino acid requirements. And this is, of course, an extreme example. No one eats just one food all day. So it's almost impossible to not get enough amino acids throughout the day. And this can be proven yourself. If someone were to just log their food intake for the day on a plant-based diet accurately and put it into Chronometer, for example, it shows you all the amino acids. You're going to be exceeding all those amino acids in sufficient quantities.
Why do you think the whole incomplete protein term has kind of been bounced around?
I believe it's from a book from the 1970s, a nutrition book, and I forget the name of it, but that has just essentially been repeated over and over and over again, that it's just been ingrained in modern nutrition. If you ask a dietitian, they're going to say the same thing, because it's what we're taught in school. During my bachelor's in nutrition, we were taught the exact same thing. And during my biochem class, I was taught the same thing, and I actually emailed my professor showing this exact same example of eating 2,300 calories in that case of individual foods and showing they're exceeding all amino acids. And he actually made a correction in class, you know, showing, like, oh, this is the student emailed me this. I was actually incorrect in making the statement. You know, when you look at the evidence, it's just not true.
Yeah. I think what it comes from is that at a small serving size, some foods are incomplete based on their reference values. So everything is present, but it's in a lower level, and therefore, because we've written this book and we've defined what the rules are, it's under that threshold. And
even like that's true with in any case. But if you eat like I said, 2,500, 2,300 calories of that food as an athlete, you're going to be exceeding all those amino acids regardless.
You'll be fine.
Right. So it's just simply not based on reality.
Yeah. Which I wish that would go away, but oh well. We can just continue to continue with the fight of trying to prove that a plant-based diet is more sufficient. But, right. All right. I think this is pretty much coming to an end. Is there any other like interesting or kind of valuable information that you've kind of come across that maybe people might have not heard from?
Well, in terms of interesting, I would say that, so for example, some of the research I'm looking at right now is looking a lot at heart failure. I don't know if you're very, very familiar with that, but mm-hmm. I had a clinical case series published just a few months ago in the Journal of Complementary Therapies and Medicine. But essentially, we showed that those who have heart failure, so their hearts are barely able to pump blood anymore, ejection fraction is very low, meaning how much blood they're pumping out. There's a lot of thickening of the heart. It's very thick, and because it's a lot of collagen and fibrotic tissue, we're able to show that that could be reversed on a plant-based diet. That's a whole new frontier of research that has not been investigated very well. There's case series, but not any formal clinical trials showing this. So that's going to be the next frontier in terms of cardiovascular disease reversal on a plant-based diet, is looking at heart failure. And that's what my research focus has been on lately. So
is that where you want it to head? Is
like, yeah, you said, I think that's, you want to... that's where I'm heading to. And my dissertation project is going to be focusing on that in an animal-based model.
Mm. Okay. It sounds very productive and obviously is going to be quite life-changing for some people, isn't it?
Right, right. Yeah, it's a 50% mortality rate within 5 years, even with modern medicine. So, and it affects hundreds of thousands of people. Every year there's a new diagnosis of 100,000. So, yeah, definitely a big concern.
So I think the last thing or the last question I've got to ask you is, if people obviously want to find out more about you and we follow you on Instagram or that kind of thing, how can they kind of get in touch?
Yeah, you can follow me on Instagram at plantbasedclimber. And I have an email button there. You can email me for questions. I have a link on there which leads to my publications as well, my bibliography. And I post various nutrition things, a lot of climbing stuff, because that's my passion outside of nutrition. But yeah, I have highlight videos on eggs, on meats, on branched chain amino acids, a lot of myths regarding that. So yeah, you can just look at those highlights, stories, and they go into the science behind those things.
Yeah, and just for people listening, it's plant-based_climber, right. So that. Like, where is it? And yeah. I think I'm also going to put that in the show notes. I'll also put a link to the plant-based diet and reduction of body fat effects and insights that you've obviously just published. Are you working on anything else similar like that? Any other review articles that are going to be coming out?
So I have several publications which are in the works. None of them are review articles. I have some cell studies looking at macrophages, which is a type of white blood cell involved in heart disease. Looking at the inflammatory process and treating them with different types of berries, more functional food type research, and the same thing with endothelial cells and some animal studies, but no review articles at this time that I'm working on.
Okay. And yeah. I guess we've already kind of talked or focused on weight loss. Just had a thought. What about muscle gain? What would your advice be for people that need to put on weight?
As long as calorie needs are being met, really it comes down to just how well the workout is. For example, there's a really good review article, very, very thorough, essentially showing that protein supplements have essentially no effect on muscle building. It's really, as long as you're eating a healthy diet, you're going to be able to put on muscle mass. And this is a really rigorous review article published in a good journal. So as long as you're meeting your calorie needs, you're going to be able to build muscle as long as the workout is effective.
Yes, you need a stimulus and then you need the bricks to build it back up, basically.
Yep.
Okay, cool. Well, thank you so much for taking time out in your morning to chat to me. It's been very insightful for myself and hopefully for people listening.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
That's okay. And we will talk soon.
All right. Sounds good. Have a good day.